From the Hull City Hall, Dead Ringers.
This is Today with me, John Humphreys, Radio 4's original Big Beast, with the time just coming up to 12 minutes before November. Kenneth Clark has set his case for the Conservative leadership. He joins me now from the ashtray of the radio car.
Good morning, John. That's right. And many wavering Tories are coming round to my way of thinking that all that is needed to see that the Conservative Party has a bright future is lots of lager and a pair of beer goggles.
Presumably they want a heavyweight figure from the left to stop the party's inexorable drift to the right.
No, they just want a heavyweight. You see, the party's tried three thin, balding leaders in a row that didn't work, so now they want to try a fat, avuncular one with lots of hair. And I'm the plumpest, jolliest, cigar-smoking, hush-puppy-wearing MP on the opposition benches.
Well, you say that, but already two jolly, fat leadership rivals have been put up by the right of the party. I'm joined here in the studio by Brian Blessed and Father Christmas. If I could turn first to you, Brian Blessed, why are you running?
Because I feel the Tory message isn't being heard outside the home counties, and all I have to do is go up an octave, and the entire country from Land's End to John O'Groats can hear it without me even having to leave this studio.
Right, what about you, Father Christmas?
Ho, 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 ho. Well, John, if elected, I plan to spread joy and goodwill to good little Tory boys and girls everywhere. I'm much better at bribing the country with shiny giveaways than ever he was when he was Chancellor.
But wouldn't it be fair to say, Father Christmas, that many people, even some in your own constituency who voted for you, don't believe you exist?
Ah, yes, that's what they said about Ian Duncan Smith, but he's still got the top job.
Well, John, I've heard quite enough. If either of these two becomes leader, they've got about as much chance of being elected Prime Minister as a three-legged donkey does.
Indeed, we've just had word from Blackpool that the three-legged donkey has confirmed he will be running for Tory leader, and he still stands a better chance than Liam Fox or Malcolm Rifkin.
And now, book at bedtime. And to mark the fact that more than 300 million copies of the Harry Potter books have now been sold worldwide, Martin Jarvis now reads J.K. Rowling's latest royalty check.
1 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0
over on long wave for the next 27 hours.
I'm Bill Oddie, the only wildlife presenter who comes free at the bottom of a box of cornflakes. And I'm here in the Republic of Congo to investigate reports this week that wild gorillas have been spotted using rudimentary tools. If true, it means they're even more similar to man than we thought. Here, the patriarch of the tribe has discovered a termite mound, and yes, he's looking around for a stick to use as a tool, but he can't find one. Now, that's a very distinctive call there. It's directed at the young of the tribe, and it roughly translates as, "Have your ruddy kids been messing around with my tools again?" And that's the matriarch responding with the high-pitched whooping cry that means, "No, no one's touched your tools. If only you put them back where you finished with them." Like my dad always did, you wouldn't have this problem. And now, with a few choice remarks about his mate's father, off he goes to borrow a termite stick from a neighbouring gibbon. But no, the gibbon's refusing to lend him his termite poking stick. Until he returns the sheltering leaf he borrowed last monsoon season. And now the patriarch's given up on the whole idea and has stamped back into his den in a huff to watch the dung beetle racing until someone makes him dinner. Truly, they are our closest relatives.
My fellow amnesiacs. There has been much criticism this week of my decision to appoint White House staffer Harriet Myers to the Supreme Court because she's never been a judge. But I say an Employee of the Month award is an Employee of the Month award. And any hoots, no one I appoint is qualified for the job. Before I hired her, Condoleezza Rice was a waitress in a strip joint in Toledo. And Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld were the strippers. And before I made Michael Chertoff head of Homeland Security, he was my pajama case, Mr. Fruit Loops. Ms. Myers was not my first choice to replace Diana Ross in the Supremes. My first choice was Grover off Sesame Street. But he was vetoed by the religious right for an obvious reason, as they could not be sure he'd take a sufficiently tough line on gay marriage, given his friendship with Bert and Ernie. But I have no doubt Ms. Myers will perforate her duty to faithfully execute our forefathers, who in 1776 gathered in Philadelphia to eat cheese. She has given me wise counsel during her time here in the White House, running the Dunkin' Donuts concession. But for her sage advice, I would never have notified that you're only supposed to open cereal packets from the top, that Tuesday comes after Wednesday, and that Huggies are far better than Pampers for overseas tourists because of their better absorbency. God bless Judge Dredd.
BBC Radio 4, the headlines again. Americans have welcomed the news that Prince Charles and Camilla Parker Bowles are to tour there, as they're still confused as to which is Wallace and which is Gromit. Following Sigourney Weaver's highly acclaimed performance in a recent Radio 4 play, other Hollywood stars are now flocking to Radio 4, starting now with this week's edition of Money Box.
Hello and welcome to Money Box with me, Paul Lewis. And in a change to the advertised edition, Morgan Freeman will be answering your money worries in his wise old cop persona that he always does. First up this week, we've had a letter from a Mr. Hughes in Kent. He's recently received a large inheritance lump sum and he wants to know whether he'd be best investing it in a tax-free ISA or perhaps an index-linked bond.
Hey there, Mr. Hughes. Now, just hold your horses. I was a lot like you once. Headstrong, young, like a fool. I was always investing lump sums in this ISA or that index-linked bond. But let me tell you, son, time gonna teach you all kind of lessons. One day, you're gonna turn around. Everything you know, son's going to be gone.
But surely an ISA would offer Mr. Hughes both healthy investment growth and...
Hey, you got a wife at home who loves you, Mr. Hughes. And you got your children. Mr. Hughes, go to them. Play with your kids. Put ISAs, PEPs, index-linked bonds out of your mind. Them things only going to bring you grief.
Okay, well, maybe we should move on to our next letter. It's from a Mrs. Patterson of London who's wondering what's the best children's bank account to open for her six-month-old son, Freddie.
Now, you just hold it right there, Mrs. Patterson. You see, I was a lot like Freddie once. Young and foolish, always soiling this diaper and shaking that rattle. My parents were always opening me children's bank accounts that gave me a free lollipop. And I sucked on that lollipop. I sucked on it day and night until one day there was no more lollipop. That's what time teaches you, Freddie. You're a young man with your whole life ahead of you. You don't want to spend it sucking on no lollipop that ain't going to be there when you need it, son. Wait till you're 16. Then they'll give you a Coldplay CD and a rail card.
Next week on Moneybox, Samuel L. Jackson holds a gun to your temple and tells you which goddamn righteous mortgage provider offers the best tracker fund to suit your needs, you mothers.
Hello?
Hello, is that Viking Radio?
Yes, it is, yes.
Oh, good, 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 good. I'm interested in placing some advertising for a specific product.
Right.
Which has been developed. They're sort of like action figures of Tony Blair.
Right.
And I just wanted to advertise them and just see how they are going to be responded to within your community. I'm choosing the community of Hull to start this off, really, because as it's John Prescott's area, it might be good for a laugh. I mean, you know, useful indications to the strong association. So I mean, how can I take it forward from here, really?
What would you like to do?
It's sort of like a 10-inch tall action figure, and it's got a choice of different outfits. You know, there's one for tennis. You know, there's an open neck version for, you know, informal occasions or, you know, standing in deserts. Now, it's also got a strap-on 6-inch wide toothy grin appliance.
Oh, good grief.
I mean, it's innovative, isn't it? It's innovative.
Very.
If we pull the cord, it does some catchphrases. A real chance for a real change.
No, that is good.
Although much has been achieved, there is still much for us to do. All right, well, let's get a plan on this and let's get it moved forward.
Yeah, great.
Well, thank you for your help on this matter. Would you like a free Tony Blair action figure for yourself?
I'd love one, please, Tony, yes.
Goodbye.
Very good to speak to you.
I'm sure it is.
Okay, thank you, bye.
You're listening to the Today programme here on Radio 4. It's 8:58. You've all left for work. The only people left listening are the sick, the elderly and the mad. So it's time now for our two-minute token science story. NASA has announced plans to return a man to the moon. Britain's preeminent space explorer, if you don't count Wallace and Gromit. Professor Colin Pillinger joins us now.
Good morning, sir. Good morning, listeners. Professor Pillinger here. Thank you for enlisting me on your show to tap into my extensive space knowledge.
Actually, we just brought you in for a laugh. So, do you think this country could fly a man to the moon?
Oh, as a matter of fact, we're going to tomorrow, sir. In Beagle 3.
Marvellous. So, describe the new spacecraft for us.
Oh, I can do better than that. I can show you it, sir. I brought the first prototype in with me. There she is. Ain't she a beauty?
Professor Pillinger, how can I put this delicately? Wait a minute, I'm John Humphreys, I can't put anything delicately. Professor, that's a washing machine.
No, sir. She's an advanced spacecraft and a vast improvement on Beagle 2.
In what way?
Well, she has a dual spin cycle. And a revolutionary new non-drip fabric softener dispenser.
Granted, it does sound like quite a technological leap forward for you, Professor, but that doesn't change the fact it's just a washing machine.
I know, I'm sorry. I almost had you going there, sir, didn't I? Of course, we're not sending a washing machine into space. Oh, no, me and the gang were just pulling your leg. We do like a practical joke, sir, we do. Last Christmas, we phoned up NASA and pretended that we were real space scientists and not just the provisional wing of the Campaign for Real Ale. What a laugh it was. Oh, how we chuckled. Oh, no, no, sir. The real Beagle 3 is safely under wraps back at Mission HQ at my mum's flat. Oh, I've spent months designing it, sir, and we're keeping the finished project safely under wraps until launch date.
Right, but of course, suffice to say, it won't turn out to be a vacuum cleaner strapped to a wheelie bin with a two-way walkie-talker receiver taped to the front.
Who told you? There's spies everywhere there are. Was it NASA? I bet it was. They were always jealous that Beagle 2 could pick up Test Match Special on long wave and the lousy Mars lander couldn't.
Good morning, I'm Libby Purvis. It's the middle of the week, so welcome to Midweek. Crazy name, crazy show. We start this week with one of Britain's foremost experts in the field of robotic artificial intelligence. He's Professor Andreas Johnston.
Yes, nice to be with you, Libby.
So, Professor Johnston, tell us about the thought-provoking book you've written.
I'm sorry, I don't understand, Lemmy.
Tell us about your book, which no doubt touches at some point on Isaac Asimov's famous first rule of robotics.
A book? No. I haven't actually written a book.
What?
No. I'm just here for a chat, really. You see, see the problem I have with Asimov's first rule...
You haven't written a book. So you're saying that you came in here to my lovely midweek studio today and you're not flogging anything?
It's not a problem, is it?
Take these. Here's a pen and paper. You're not leaving this studio until I've got the first 6 chapters in my hand.
I'm meeting my head of faculty for lunch at 12.
Right, just for that, make it 7 chapters. Any more back chat and I'll want a whole first draft by the time you and yours starts.
Oh, dear.
Well, get a move on. Now, you there, the Olympic swimmer, what's your ISBN number? Well, come and hurry up.
You're back with the Today programme where the time is just coming up to the point where Michael Gray should back off or else. I'm the big beast of this Radio 4 jungle. David Davis has been the latest of the Conservative leadership candidates to address the party conference in Blackpool. How have senior Tories reacted to his speech? I'm joined from the radio car by Ian Duncan Smith, John Major and William Hague. Your thoughts first, Mr. Duncan Smith.
Well, no one can deny, John, that David Davis's speech was lacklustre, dull, insipid, yawn-inducing, boring and utterly tedious. His supporters must be over the moon this morning.
Right, so that's good then. John Major.
Of course, John, but remember... there's always a danger at these occasions that he might say something interesting. Or, God forbid, a half-decent joke. But David Davis knows better than that. He knows that droning on and on in a dull, monotonous voice is what truly marks you out as a Conservative leader in waiting.
Right, but what about accusations from his rivals that the fact that he's the son of a single mother makes him a bit interesting?
Well, that was a real challenge for him, but he rose to it magnificently. Any traces of interesting had clearly been erased by a lifetime of service to the Tory party. He didn't want to repeat William Hague's mistakes.
Yes, Ian, I donned that baseball cap and destroyed years of good work, boring everyone senseless with my flat Yorkshire vowels. And I was cursed forever with the tag of being slightly interesting.
I see. So does he have the potential to be one of the greats?
Well, let's not talk about record election defeats yet. We shouldn't be too cocky.
Indeed, all that I will say is that if I was him, I'd already be preparing my triumphant resignation speech to be delivered on the steps of Central Office the morning after the next general election.
All this week, only in the Daily Mail, read all the dull bits of Sharon Osbourne's autobiography that weren't serialised last week in The Sun.
You'll read for the first time about the day Ozzy bit the leg of a chicken.
We had it for Sunday lunch, you silly cow.
Let me tell you about the night Ozzy slipped into a strange coma around 11 and didn't emerge from it until 8 the next morning.
I was f***ing asleep.
And the awful day when Ozzy cheated on me.
I only did it in a game of Monopoly, babe.
The Daily Mail. Yesterday's news, today.
Hall Pets and Gardens.
Hall Pets and Gardens. Ah, that's beautiful. My name's Steve Irwin, the crocodile hunter. This is Terry, my wife, and this is my dog, Suey. Listen, what sort of pets have you got in your pet shop there?
What was you after?
You've got dragons?
Yeah, like bearded dragons.
Bearded dragons?
Yeah.
That's like a euphemism where I come from. I've never found one of those before. I've tricked a lot of these critters, but I've never come across a bearded dragon. What the hell is that?
It's like a grey dragon, and when it gets older, it has, like, tusks under its chin, and it looks like a beard.
It sounds like Rolf Harris with scales. Beauty, beauty.
Is there anything I can help you with?
Yeah, keep going through your list of pets. Have you got anything like furry and fluffy, like little, you know, rodents and stuff like that, rabbits?
Yes, we do. Hamsters, rats. dwarf hamsters, gerbils, mice.
How much for all of them? If I buy all your rabbits, rats, gerbils, how much for the lot of them?
You want the full lot?
I want all of them.
Are you messing me about, or are you saying yes?
No, no, it's for real. How much about for all of them?
All of our rodents all together?
Yeah.
About 350 quid.
That's fine. And if you got a room round the back where I can bring Baz round, my West African python...
No, we haven't got a dangerous wild animal licence, we can't stock anything like that, I'm afraid.
Hey, don't worry. I know what I'm doing with them. Well, you leave them to me.
Are you asking for a job?
I'll come round with Baz. We'll nip round the back. You fetch all the rodents over. I'll give you 350 quid and we can give all the rodents to Baz for his tea. You're going to let my little West African python go hungry.
I am going to let your little West African python not eat all our animals, because that's illegal.
Come on, you've got to help me out here, babe.
No, again, I can't. It's illegal.
Well, what if you give him a steak and kidney pie to be going on with?
Oh, go on then.
You're an angel.
Yeah, we'll sell you one of them.
I'll see you in a little bit, babe.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Hello, I'm Roger Bolton, and welcome to Feedback. Last series, you may recall, we had a flood of complaints about a radio program. And then the following week, we had a deluge of letters defending the show. And then the following week, we had another influx of letters lambasting the people who defended the program. Then the following week, they attacked the people who attacked it in the first place. Then the people came pouring from their houses, waving kitchen utensils and garden implements, and it soon turned into all-out civil war. Large trenches were built, radios were burnt. Thousands perished in a long and bitter campaign. So let's never speak of it ever again. That's all for Feedback this week. Goodbye.
BBC Radio 4, I'm Charlotte Green. Following this week's Conservative conference, the exact procedure for the election of the new leader is now in place. It involves a round table, a bottle of gin, a loaded revolver, a bullet, and the soundtrack to The Deer Hunter. And now, The Archers, an everyday story of warring siblings, marriage wreckers, and bastard children. Down at the Bull, Clary, Eddie, and Joe are drowning their sorrows.
I still can't believe that Emma could have actually been married to Will for a year, yet she now claims she never loved him.
How could any woman not love us Grundies?
Well, some women are like that. They can hide their feelings. Hide the fact they're trapped in a pitiful, loveless marriage. And every day they wake up and look at the man snoring his head off on the pillow next to them and they think to themselves, today is the day, Eddie Grundy, I'm going to cave the back of your skull in with a hammer so I'll finally be free of you. Some women are like that. So I hear. There must be some reason why our boys turned out so bad.
Actually, I think this might be all my fault.
You, Eddie?
You see, one day when Eddie was a little and he was naughty, I made him stand in the naughty circle for 30 seconds longer than Super Nanny recommends.
There must be something else, Eddie. Think.
Well, there was that time I sold my soul to the devil, but I hardly think that has anything to do with all our current misfortunes.
You what?
I sold my soul to the devil. The horned one said in exchange for our kids turning out as monsters, we'd get to enjoy a lifetime of sheer luxury in opulent surroundings.
Aye, don't you think he might have shortchanged you somewhat?
Don't be ridiculous, Joe. Just look around you. Oh, crap.
Coming soon to cinemas, the hastily cobbled together sequel to The Da Vinci Code that the producers are rushing out even before the first film is released, because they know it's going to make so much cash there won't be enough horrors in Hollywood to spend the money on. Tom Hanks returns to the role of art lecturer Robert Langdon.
You were right, Sophie. His paintings have got a message hidden within them.
I knew it. One far more damaging to the church than the secrets hidden in The Da Vinci Code.
We just gotta figure out what it is.
Bum, 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 bum. A little bit of sky over there. Bum, 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 bum. Bum, bum, bum. Let's have some of those little flaming galahs over here. Bum, 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 bum.
The Rolf Harris Code. Do these supposedly innocent-looking paintings of the Australian bush hide a sinister secret the Vatican would kill to protect?
Robert, have you worked out what it is yet?
No, but there has to be something. I refuse to believe that they're just random daubings that Rolf's thrown onto the canvas willy-nilly.
Of course, yes. Look, it was staring at us the whole time. Jesus was a dingo. Mary was a swagman, and Opus Dei are those flaming galahs flying off into the bush.
She's right, you know, and the Holy Ghost is the one driving the ute.
The Rolf Harris Code, coming soon to a theater near you. Can you tell what it is yet? You've been listening to Dead Ringers from the Hull City Hall. It was performed by John Culshaw, Jan Ravens, Mark Perry and Kevin Connolly. It was written by Tom Jameson and Neff Fountain, John Finnemore, John Culshaw, and it was devised by Bill Dare. The producer is Katie Marsden.
Good evening. Following the sad death of the great Ronnie Barker, I've been asked to spray a few worms on behalf of the Loyal Society for the prevention of piss pronunciations. We at the Sobriety knew Rennie as a tigerless spokesman for our cause, but the world knew and loved him as a grey tractor. He was the consomme comedian, whether in a scotch with his old friend Runny Carpet, as the crimined hardinal Norman Fanley Stretcher, or as Arkwright, the shoppering stud keeper. And now, Rooney has made that great journey up to Hendon. But I don't suppose he'll be sitting on a clown playing a carp. No, I see him at a great cocktail party in the sky, full of men in loud jackets and pretty waitresses, enjoying each other's company and whopping chests. I mean, swapping jests. And one thing is certain, Ronnie will be giving all of them a good bath. So, farewell and thanks to Ronnie Barker. You'll be mutually hissed, and we at the Sequiety will light a candle in your memory at our next annual general meeting. Or, if we can get hold of them, four candles.